All right, so we're in Deuteronomy. But as we think of Deuteronomy, and we think of like the
don't do this. I want to hit you with the back of the head.
When you think of Deuteronomy, you think of kind of the Pentateuch and or the Torah and the theme that we find in each book. And just kind of by way of review, in the book of Genesis, what do you get? In the beginning, God. It kind of introduces the character of God, or who God is. And again, you don't know too much about God in Genesis, except for the fact that He creates some things, and He makes some promises to this guy. They made like this guy from the land of the Chaldeans, and it's kind of cool, because by the time you're going to Deuteronomy, like, you're starting to see this the second promise being fulfilled. But so that's how Genesis starts. In the beginning, God. And you get to Exodus, and what do you learn about God?
The question, who is the Lord?
Yes, who is the Lord? And really, Moses, I mean, whatever Pharaoh's asking, he's, who is the Lord that I should obey Him? And God's, I mean, He shows him, essentially. And then you get to what chapter? Exodus chapter 34, where God shows, like, this is my nature, this is who I am, the Lord, Lord, bounding in mercy and truth. And I'm going to stop before I start forgetting, like, I'm going to skip one, I'm going to forget it. So, Exodus 34. You get to Leviticus, and what do you learn about God? Yes, you learn about the holiness of God, the fact that God is holy. And what story shows that in Leviticus?
Chapter 10
is the story of Nadab and Abihu. And what happened there? They offered up strange fire. And we didn't get to talk about this too much, but even the idea, like, strange fire, I don't know what it all was, but it's a strange fire that the Lord did not ask. And that was what was wrong. And God said, before the people, I will be viewed as holy. So we have lessons 10 and 11 coming around. No, but yeah, there might be like 1 and 2. So just look at them. They should both be there. So yeah, in Leviticus 10, you see the holiness of God. In Numbers, what do you see? Or what do you get in Numbers?
God's faithfulness.
The faithfulness of God with coupled with the unfaithfulness of Israel. And there's a few stories that show that. I mean, what story comes up to your mind when you think in Numbers, where you kind of see God being faithful and trying to be faithful to His promises while the people are being unfaithful to Him? The story of the spies. You get Balaam and Balak later on. Like, there's all these different stories where God is trying to be faithful to His promise, but the people won't trust Him. And then you get to Deuteronomy, and kind of what's been like the theme that at least when I'm teaching, and Marty went through it a little bit this past week, but when you go through Deuteronomy, what's kind of the theme of a repeated phrase that we see there? Yes, this land that God is giving you. Don't forget that God has given it to you. Remember when you were slaves. And so there's kind of this theme of like this God, the grace of God. And God being a gracious God, that He just gives and gives and gives. And so He says, don't forget this. Which, like, this theme will really show up kind of where we are in lesson 10. But, alright, give me, like, quick synopsis of where we are.
So,
like,
before we do that, this has got 10 and 11 alternating mixed together. So, probably only you need 11. Got 10. Everybody figure that out. Okay, so dig down and find some 11.
Okay, so, what's just happened? Like, where are we now? In our, like, in Deuteronomy, where are we? Like, I'm telling you to tell me what happened last class.
The people are about to enter the land, but Moses isn't.
Okay, and that's really what we're starting to see in chapter 11, for sure. I mean, sorry, in chapter 31, for sure. But in chapter 30, what's happened? Like, what's happened in the last few chapters? What have we seen in the last few chapters?
The blessings.
Yes. Yes. So you get these two mountains, and essentially what he's doing is he's appealing to them to commit to God, and he does that by talking, like Paul was saying, about these blessings and these cursings. And essentially, like, but why? Like, why are they doing all of this? And this kind of will go with, like, the first question, like, question one that we get there. And if you have lesson 10, let's go ahead and, as you think about it, so he's just finished talking in the end of 30 about these blessings and these cursings.
Their future depends upon if they follow His commands, they will be blessed.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, there's the alternative. They're going to be destroyed.
Yeah. And
And that's exactly what it's going. And he finishes off, but it's not like he's angry. It's not like he dislikes them. He finishes chapter 30, and he says, therefore, choose what?
Life.
Like, therefore, choose life that you might live. And what was choosing life?
Obedience
to God. This is like, let me study this, but this just becomes so much more true when you talk to people. So Barry and I were talking to a guy. Well, I can't remember what day of the week it was, but we were Friday. So Friday night we were talking to a guy, and we were like, we ended up talking about spiritual things and talking about God and things, and like his reasoning for not wanting to like change, come to church and even or study. He said, I want to live a little. I want to drink a little. I want to go to the beach and vacay a little. And it was so funny. Even like thinking about it, there's this idea like he wanted to live.
Dancing, drinking, and being on the beach was living.
Yeah, that's the thing. He wanted to live. We see here that choosing life and choosing to live is really doing what? According to Moses. Yeah, so yeah, that kind of life is really just being cursed in death, but really deciding to live is to obey God and to follow after him and follow after his statutes and to listen to what he says. Like that is what life really is.
And in this he's teaching, I am the source of life.
Mm-hmm.
This is really truly living. Without me, it is death. And that's where you see these cursing. Without God, it is death.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Lord is your life.
Yeah.
The Lord is your
life. And so we're going to pick up in chapter 30, verse 19, and we'll kind of take a running start into chapter 31. But someone read 30, verses 19 through the end of the chapter.
Chapter 30?
Yeah, verses 19 through the end of the chapter.
I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life that you and your offsprings may live. Loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice, and holding fast to him. For he is your life and length of days, that you may dwell in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob.
And so when he says, so choose life, what does choosing life consist of, according to verse 20? There are three things. And he says, so choose life that you might live. There are three things that you're doing, which could even kind of all be the same thing, but I think he purposefully says it in three different ways.
Love, obeying,
and what's the third one?
Hold fast.
Or being faithful. Love, obedience, and faithfulness. And that, it's just cool to see that, like, you think about those three things, the love and the obedience for service and faithfulness. Like, that could also be said of, like, for any relationship to work, those are the three things that you need. You need to love one another. You need to serve one another. You need to hold fast to one another. And so even as God is talking to them about this living, and even like of them living together and God abiding with them and them abiding with him, like that all stems from this relationship that they were going to have. Where they were going to choose to love him, and they were going to choose to obey him, and they were going to choose to hold fast. And this was very conditional, because it was up to them. If they decided to do these things, then they were going to live. Questions or comments through that there before we kind of jump into 31? All right, so if you have a lesson 10, you can kind of start turning to that there. And the way I broke down the chapter, it's essentially one big thing, and it's all the same story, but it's Joshua being chosen to succeed Moses, or Joshua being commissioned in this chapter. But I broke it down so like whenever you're reading it and as we go through it here, it's more palpable. But in the first 8 verses, you get Joshua being chosen to succeed Moses. And then verses 9 through 13, and there's these verses about this necessity to fear and follow God, is how I phrase it. You may phrase it differently or see it differently, but he's talking about like the Levites are telling them that they had to read the law before the people. And then he ends by, and I had changed that, but it's really again talking about Joshua being chosen and then preparing for the death of Moses. It's this dual thing, like both things are happening there. Yeah, I guess you could see it when you get to 3 in the back, commissioning Joshua and preparing for the death of Moses. But so those are essentially like that's what we're reading through as we go through this here.
So, chapter 31, someone read the first 8 verses.
Moses went and spoke to the Lord's fathers. He said to them, I'm 120 years old today. I'm no longer able to come and go. The Lord said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. It is the Lord your God who will cross the heaven and will destroy these nations before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross the heaven. The Lord will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. The Lord will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, for the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous. You shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you, not fear of you.
So, these first 8 verses, like, what tone, like, what's the tone and the mood of these verses here?
Calming and reassuring.
And so, yeah, calming and reassuring, definitely for the people. But even as Moses is talking, like, does this seem like some of the happier parts of the section here?
This seems like a almost stern father that says, you know, this. I'm 120 years old. Mm-hmm. This is my last statement to you on how to behave.
Yeah. So there's even that sense of like this father to his children appeal, where he knows he's going to be gone, and he's kind of trying to look out for them, and he's trying to tell them, look, what are you going to do after this? What else? Like, what else do you like? Just if you're an Israelite living in whatever day and age this was, and you're hearing Moses say this, like, what's running through your head?
I'm worried about this because Moses, the leader for all these years, is no longer going to be there as we cross over into this new adventure on the other side of the Jordan.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit. This the idea of Moses being their head. I mean, Joshua being their head. And Moses, they would have seen Moses as kind of this figurehead. We'll talk about like the idea of leadership. But you think about these things. Sorry, James, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just the same thing. I mean, mm-hmm. that 120 years. I mean, even though they saw 40, or at least 80 of those years, mm-hmm. Some of them were over 40 for the most part, but that's all they know mm-hmm. is Moses. I mean, like I said, Joshua's been around, but he hasn't been in that place of Moses, and he's saying, he is the one you're going to look forward to.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge.
And his life almost demonstrates how disobedience.
Yes, and that's
doesn't give him the opportunity. He should be the example for them. Look, see what disobedience brought. I don't get to go there.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a second. I think that's spot on. See,
I get from the early verses that he keeps saying, "And the Lord." Mm-hmm. He's taking the pressure, the focus off of him.
Yes.
And God.
Yes, absolutely. So again, so you go through these verses and. It seems sober. You know, it's a real thing. Like, Moses is getting to the end of his life, and like you guys are saying, like, we've been following Moses from Exodus chapter the end of chapter 1, chapter 2, and you almost start to think to yourself, well, this is a story about Moses. He's the leader. He's doing all these things. Then you start to remember, like, chapters like this remind us, this isn't a story about Moses. This is a story about God. And you're absolutely right. So why is it Moses going to the promised land again? What did he do?
Disobeyed.
He disobeyed God. By doing what?
Struck a rock.
Yeah, he struck a rock. And he disobeyed God.
When he was told what to do.
Yes.
He was told exactly
So then here's my question. He just struck a rock. Think about how many other Israelites are going into the land. I got to check these. How many Israelites are going into the land who have done much more worse things? All he did was strike a rock. Like, is this fair?
God is just.
It's a two-part thing because he was told what to do and he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He was supposed to speak to the rock, not
strike the rock. Right. Yeah.
So in purpose, he was still accomplishing the same thing by directing, you know, the rock, but he didn't do it exactly the way God said.
But the other part of it is that, you know, he made it sound like he and God were the ones that had to do this.
Mm-hmm.
God alone.
Yeah, because even as he says, like, do I have to put up with you? When he strikes the rock, which it, but think about that, like, in Paul just said, like, God is just.
So even as you kind of, as we kind of think about this, and Moses not being able to enter into the promised land, and we think of our righteousness, like I read this, and I struggle with verses like this, and I struggle with stories like this. Because if anyone in the nation of Israel should have been able to go into that land, like Moses should have been able to go. You know?
But Bill, you know what I say?
What do you say,
By
Paula?
By the grace of Christ. That's what I say.
And that's
the grace. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine it. See, he was discounted because of one sin, and we are covered if we ask forgiveness.
Yeah, and that's again where that even goes to, even the fact that they're getting into this land is by the grace of God and the great, and just God being gracious. But just this idea again, as we think about righteousness, we think about our righteousness and what we think is right in comparison to God, this is kind of where we see where God stands alone. And what God thinks is right isn't always necessarily how we would do things. But God knows what he's doing. And again, even for the people, I see you, Hammond, that's deep. Even for the people, like you just think about this. If Moses, the guy who led them to the promised land, wasn't going to be able to go in because of this one act of disobedience way back when, like they needed to take heed to the words that he was saying. Hammond?
I'm not sure where it is, but it also says that he didn't regard God as holy in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think too, like just seeing the big picture, like he's not being condemned to hell for this action. He's not being told, okay, you're lost for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
He's given a consequence for that disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
And God is so gracious to him to even like he lets him see the promised land, like, and it's not just like a teaser, like, oh, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's him being kind to him, but also with a consequence. And so I think that we see his grace, but also his judgment, and
yeah. And those things, I mean, like we don't separate those things, God's grace and God's judgment. Like they work together, essentially. Stephen and James.
I was going to say that when you read later on how teachers and leaders are more accountable, it's kind of puts. I think about this right here, because they're in front of other people, and because they have opportunity to influence other lives, then it's more serious when they do things. If I struck a rock, like you were saying earlier, it doesn't really go so much.
Yeah, you just struck a rock.
But Moses was the leader of, 3 million people.
It's a little more noticeable, yeah. And it goes back to, like, what I'm saying, like, just the idea of, like, revering, like, well, that's what God tells Moses to tell Aaron whenever Nadab and Abihu offer up the strange fire. Tell Aaron that before the people, I will be revered as holy. That's Leviticus chapter 10, verse 3.
I just, like what Amy was saying, our struggle is usually the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say, God, now if you continue in whatever this thing is, you can lose your soul, but the consequences is what we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Where God has already built things into this world, that if you do this, you get this, and sometimes, not something other, but the consequences sometimes seems more the bear than the losing of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what the perspectives say. There is a consequence for this, but you can still, your soul can still live with God eternally.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing, we don't like the consequences of actions that we take that may lead us. Maybe we have to be single for the rest of our days.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems, you know, that may be 60 years. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't do that, you know, but you said, following the Lord,
mm-hmm.
you will live. If you disobey, you'll die.
Absolutely.
So I put that together with what Paul said earlier. Moses was their example in a negative sense, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was serving God's purpose by that. He was the reference. It comes back up in the next chapter 32 about he did hallow me into his glory. He's told him in Numbers 20 and later explained what he said. Somebody pointed out that earlier in Deuteronomy when this comes up, Moses doesn't mention it was his mistake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? That yes. Was chapter 3 or somewhere.
Yes, he does.
But here in the latter part, he does. He is more explicit than God.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't hallow me. That's that part of it. Anyway, yes, so Moses was their example. In negative ways as well.
Mm-hmm. So looking at, like, so we continue.
I want to live past 120.
You say you want to live past 120?
Oh. I mean, if you'd gone in, how many years would it have been? You know, 2-3 years. I don't know. You get a chance to see the land.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the war. I, there's some symbolic disappointment.
But he had the honor of God burying him, Marty.
Yeah, I think it was probably protecting people a little further in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So protecting them even further from like idolizing Moses,
yeah,
you mean?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. So because if not, we're not going to finish chapter 31, and this will be on me again. Like the last, I know I have a hard time finishing even a chapter here. So before even mentioning the fact that Joshua is going to be their head, like Moses specifically says in these first 8 verses, someone else is going to lead you. Who's supposed to lead them? Before even mentioning Joshua, actually.
God is the one who's
supposed
to lead.
Verse 3, he says, "It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy the nations before you, and you shall dispossess them." Joshua is the one who will cross just ahead of you. So it's interesting, verse 3, he says, God will be the one who goes right in front of you. And then verse 4, he says, then he starts to mention Joshua. Which, which even though they're the idea of Moses dying and Moses being gone, this idea of like their physical head figure was going to be gone? Like, did it really change the leadership for the nation? Like, it didn't really change the leadership. The leadership stayed the same. God was still their leader. Which eventually, you kind of think about how Israel fails to see this and the effects it has on them as a nation. In Judges chapter 1, you get Joshua dies. And in Judges chapter 2, you get then rose a nation who did not know the Lord and who didn't know the real leader. And you go through the Bible story, and there's some other stories like that. There's a story in somewhere in 2 Chronicles, like chapter 23 or 24, but don't quote me on that. You get the story of Joash. And Joash became king when he was like 7 or 8 years old. And his uncle, Jehozadak, I think that was his name, he was the priest at the time. And as long as Jehozadak was alive, Jehoiada, there we go. I saw Emily turn to the side, and it hit me again. Joash, Jehoiada was his uncle, Jehoiada was the priest, and as long as Jehoiada was alive, Joash was faithful, and then when Jehoiada died, it's like, I mean, he gets to the point where Joash kills Jehoiada's son. Well, what happened? What happened is that to him, and the idea, his connection to God was gone, and so to him it's like God was gone. And you see that with the people. And as soon as Joshua was gone, they're like their connection to God was is at least what they would have thought and what they would have thought or subconsciously thought. God is gone. Joshua's gone. God is gone. We do whatever we feel like doing now. We no longer submit ourselves to this guy or to this leader. And that's a problem that Israel had over and over again. Is that they never really saw who their real leader was. And their true leader wasn't Moses. Their true leader wasn't Joshua. It wasn't David. It wasn't Solomon. They had the same leader all throughout. And every time they failed to see that, as a people and as a nation, they failed that. Or they failed.
They did with the golden calf.
That's
their exact statement.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened to Moses, so let's go do this.
Exactly. That's a really, really good point, actually.
That happens with the local church time and time again in my lifetime, I think. Where it's based on what the elder says or what the evangelist says. And if they go off,
off kilter than even.
Yeah.
Or you look at a lot of kids who go to college and they aren't being as faithful. What happened? Well, they're no longer with mom and dad. So they're not like, they're like, we were following mom and dad as they were following God. Well, now I'm off doing my own thing. So because mom and dad aren't around, then that means that God isn't around.
They don't have a
which just isn't true.
Own.
Exactly. And so he tells them, God will be like, God is going up before you. But Joshua will be there as well. And then he tells Joshua something. What does he tell Joshua? He says a few words that show up here that really are some of our memory verses, but will show up over and over and over again. Be strong and courageous. Why? Because you're super muscular and you really know how to fight.
For the Lord is the one who goes before you.
Yes. Be strong and courageous because I will be with you. You kind of think about, again, even some other stories in Scripture where people were like, were strong and courageous. And they weren't strong and courageous because of who they were. I think we talked about this in one of the earlier lessons here. Like, where God over and over again made the people like do things that sounded absolutely ridiculous as far as war tactics. Like take trumpets and lamps and your army is way too big. Yeah, with Gideon, your army is way too big. Let's drop down to 300. Or David is going to go fight this guy who's been fighting since his youth, Goliath, and he doesn't wear an armor. In fact, he takes some rocks with him. It's interesting, like, whenever David goes, David's doing this in the name of God. God is like, God will defeat you. And so as he's telling Joshua to be strong and courageous, the reason why is because God is going before you. And what does he say? Like, in this section, I don't know if you notice, notice what he says there in verse 4. The Lord will do to them just as he did to who? To Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their lands. You could also imagine, God will do to them what he did to the Egyptians. And what Moses does is that Moses, he looks back to these previous victories that God had won to give him faith for the future one, or to give Joshua faith for the future ones. It's the same thing, you notice, that David does whenever he's going to go fight Goliath. And he's like, I've defeated bears and lions. I can take this guy. God's helped me. God's protected me when I was with bears and lions. I can take this guy. I can do this. And there's this sense where we look back at the previous victories and we look back at the faithfulness of God. And even for us today, like, that has got to give us hope. That's got to increase our faith. The fact that God has been faithful and we can be strong and courageous as we fight this fight. We can be strong and courageous knowing that God has been faithful and He will continue to be faithful. Isn't that what Paul says in Romans 8? Like, who can separate you from the love of Christ? And he goes through this list. Like, if God didn't spare His Son in loving you, like, what can take you away? God's with you. And so in verses 7 and 8, you get, Moses calls Joshua and he says to him in the sight of all the people, this is what God is doing for you. Or he says in the sight of all the people, again, he says it again, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to give to them. That's the right, that idea there. And you shall give it to them as the inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not be feared or dismayed. Why would he, like, say this to Joshua in the sight of all the people? What would be the point of that? So there's a passing of the long mantle, but again, he could have said that in one of the small tents, just him and Joshua.
But I mean, in front of everybody else, now they see who they're
moving. Yes. I think there is some of that. I think that's what's going on there, that he takes Joshua and in front of all the people, he says, this is the guy. Like, I'm no longer going to be around. This is the guy. Because there's a few things you can think of in Israel history before, and you'll see it afterwards, where and there's kind of some butting of heads in the leadership. And who's really the leader? And I want to be the leader. And I want to be this. And I want to be that. And Moses takes Joshua and he says, look, like, inside, in front of all the people, Joshua will lead you guys. Like, and Joshua will go before you. Go ahead, Paula.
It's also painting the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of the big picture. You're part of this promise that I gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
You are the nation that was created. And here, this leadership is going to continue that nation because they get the second promise of the land.
Yeah.
See, they haven't seen the land. Mm-hmm. They've never been there. None of them have been there.
Absolutely.
Maybe, too, if he has to tell Joshua as their leader to be strong and courageous, how much more so than people?
Absolutely. And it's funny because you go through Joshua in the first few chapters, like, over and over again, Joshua's being told to be strong and courageous. God tells him, the people tell him. It's like over and over again. That's, I don't know if Joshua was afraid, but I guess I would have been too. Let's keep going. Verses 9 through 13. If you've got it, go ahead and read it.
Then Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, at the set time of the year of release, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, and little ones, and the sojourner within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, and be careful to do all the words of this law, and that their children, who have not known it, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, as long as you live in the land that you are going over the Jordan.
Okay, so what were they supposed to do every 7 years, it seems like?
Read the law.
Read the law out loud. And who was supposed to be there? Like, just the men, just the leaders?
All of Israel.
Everybody. Everybody. Who's everybody?
The little kids.
So the men, the women, the little kids,
and
the sojourners, like everybody. So why at the 7-year mark?
Well, just the 7 years seems to be the big the reset for everything, because we don't see forward with the land and
the debtors.
The debtors. It's like the big reset. So it would be appropriate at the big reset to be reminded again of why all of this, again, to kind of start people off again for the next 7 years. So,
Marty, I agree, by the way.
That discussion of 7 years last week.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I absolutely think you're right. I think you think about this idea of like every 7 years, what's going on here, and the slaves are being freed, and the, yes, like the debts are gone, and just think about this, like as a people, think about this, like the significance of, you call it like the year of release, and you think of their nationalistic freedom, you think of them remembering God and the fact that they're free. Like, isn't that what we do every year? By the way, like every year, and we, and July the 4th. Like, we celebrate our Independence Day, and we start thinking about 1776. I got the year right there. And we start to think about it. Is that the year? Okay.
That's right.
And we start to, like, think about that. Which, even, like, except for, like, don't we do that every week? When we start to think about our freedom, and how we've been freed, and how that dictates the way that we now live our lives. And so, again, like, we don't sit here and read the Declaration of Independence. But they were supposed to read the law, and I think it was supposed to be both, like, just to continue to remind them, but I think the 7-year mark, the year of release, was for the sake of the people. And it's supposed to be symbolic to their, like, remember that you've been freed, remember that you weren't, like, remember that you were a slave, and now you've been freed, and God has freed you. Because it's interesting, in this law, there's steady reminders of, remember back when you were a slave in Egypt. And it's like, it's even the sense, like, well, they're not forgetting, so that they can continue to obey, they can continue to fear and follow after God. Marty, what did you want to say?
I was just going to say, Emily's question about did they ever do this. Remember we read that in Joshua 8. And the other thing they did in 8, which isn't in those earlier instructions about evil, you know, the stones set up and all that, is that they read the law, all the little ones, the women, the strangers, not one word of all Moses commanded Joshua did not read. That was probably the first year of the 7 years. So put that, what you're just describing, together with the Ebal and Gerizim event, that's probably the starting of that 7 years. And that's why those two things happen.
I see what you're saying.
At the same time.
That's pretty cool.
Even though the wife, you know, last time, the stones and the blessings and curses, mentioned reading all the law, Joshua put it together.
And kind of
started it.
So I got Steve, then James, then. Oh, sorry, Steve, then Paul, then James.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, I was just going to say the time of the year. If you think about the Feast of the Tabernacle, that was really, and my mother was agrarian, so she said that's when the big crops came. So they would be, you know, in the fall of the year, the big crops came in the last, they would be celebratory, they would be joyous, they would be grateful. We can't probably appreciate the time of the year as much as they.
That's a really good point, actually.
And in Joshua, of course, it was kind of, it was right at the Passover when they were at Gilgal. Anyway, it was right after the second Ai that they did the evil years and things. So I'm guessing it would have been towards the fall of the year. Maybe starting this. I should look and see if they say that.
That was just the more the people move further and further away from that generation, and these new people that are coming up. You know, later on, you know, the kids asking about the Passover. What is this? This is for, because soon that all these people won't, this new generation, they won't know about the wandering in the land. They won't know about all this stuff. So this reset reminder is again to inform them: you're here because of this great event, and then God freed you and sent you up. So this is again a teaching moment and a reminder for this new crop of people that are coming. They didn't experience those things that were so long ago. So this reset just continues just in a dramatic way. You think about the 7 year where almost everything gets reset in this dramatic way to kind of just remind them.
Plus, 7 year old kids would be just barely old enough to remember.
Yeah. Texas, a good point, too.
Their life is great.
Do you think as a nation, like how well did they do with this? Just in general. Like the getting together and reading through the law and then teaching their children, like, and even having their children come so that they can hear about what God has done.
Well, even Josiah couldn't even find, by the time he came, they can't even find the law. I mean, they discover the law. So, you know, how many times are they really following you?
That's true. That's a good point. The more and more I think about the nation of Israel, and you think about the nation of Israel's fall, I mean, idolatry and selfishness and self-centeredness was obviously at the root of a lot of that. But what really drove that was a lack of teaching. Like, it was a lack of teaching their children the law. Like, that's what really drove that home. It's the fact that they didn't tell their kids what God had done for them.
Daily battle today.
Yeah. And that's the parallel. And that's really the parallel for us. But you think about for them, like, over and over again, like, they didn't know the law. They didn't, well, if you think about this, you get this generation that follows God and they know who God is. And this next generation, they maybe follow God because their parents follow God, but they don't, like, they've never really learned, like, talk about personal faith and personal relationship. To have this personal relationship with God where they love Him and they obey Him and they're faithful to Him. They may have been obeying Him, but they didn't really love Him and were faithful to Him. Well, then what about their children? Like, as soon as these parents, like, as soon as the top tier is gone, then by the time you get the third set of kids, like, then they're not really obeying God, and it just spirals further and further and further away from God and from being God's people. And so, again, as you think about, like, the root of Israel's problems and the root of their issues, I think it was, again, idolatry and self-centeredness and their arrogance. But I think what really was the accelerator there and what really pushed that was the fact that they didn't teach their children about God and about God's goodness and what God has done, what God had done for them. And really, what it's interesting, because not just what God had done for them, the parents, but what God was doing for them, like the children. The fact that they were in the land, the fact that they were eating of the plenty of the land, like that was God's continual goodness toward the people. Which, Paul, like you were just saying, like, that's the same thing for us today. I mean, I don't have kids, but that's the idea. Like, if we want to continue to, you think about the kingdom, if we want for the kingdom to continue to grow, we need to be evangelizing, absolutely. We need to be going out and teaching people and seeking and saving the lost. But we also need to be teaching our children. Because if not, like, they can be lost. Like, that's just as much as the responsibility as going out and seeking and saving the lost. And so you think about, like, a lot of what Israel's condition and problems were, like, a lot of it came from not teaching their children the law. Questions or comments through that? Because if not, no, first.
Just.
Go.
Just Book of Judges real quick.
Yeah, that's
what you're talking about. You see the elders and the Levites, them just horrible with their duties.
Mm-hmm.
So they were responsible to help teach the people. They were not. They were actually encouraging the people to do things that were evil and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the spirit, you know, from the families, but then the spiritual people that God had placed there, they had just, their duties, they just totally just disregarded it,
mm-hmm.
at all. So just kind of folded in, fell in on itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And so do we have to 9:47 or 9:45? You said I always ask that? Because I never know.
It's 47.
Keep going until we start walking out.
I'll keep you in here. All right, so let's read, like, so what you get in verses 14 through 29, 14 through the end of the chapter, you get Joshua again kind of being commissioned now. And you have, like, God is preparing Moses for his death. And a lot of this end section here, like, part of me wants to just leave it to Marty and have Marty have to teach this plus his part next week. But because he's kind of preparing this song of Moses at the end of 31 here, this is where God tells Moses to go and write this song and to sing it before the people.
God created the song, though. Don't you love it?
It's beautiful. It really is.
I mean, God created it and told him to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I understood it.
So, I want to hold off on the song because that'll be Wednesday's class. But I do want us to look at verses 16 through 19 because, again, there's, like, if we can drive anything home, it's just this idea of, like, being dependent on spirit. I mean, and this is not, like, but being dependent on spiritual people as opposed to being dependent on God. Someone read verses 16 through 19 of 31.
The Lord said to Moses, "Behold, you will rest with your fathers, and this people will rise and play the harlot with the gods of the foreigners of the land where they go to be among them. and they will forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them. Then my anger shall be aroused against them in that day, and I will forsake them. I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured. Many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us. And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil which they have done, and then they have turned to other gods. Now therefore, write down this song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that the song may be a witness for me against them.
Okay, so again, what was this potential danger whenever Moses died? And it even kind of seems like the way he's phrasing it is, Moses, they're going to die. I mean, they're going to fall away because you died. Like, because you're no longer around, they're going to fall away. Which, again, is like, I know this chapter is supposed to be about Joshua and Joshua being commissioned. I feel like I haven't even talked about that at all. Read the book of Joshua. It really talks about that, especially the first few chapters there. But what you're getting is, again, he's warning the people. And he's warning Moses to warn the people. Because Moses was not supposed to be their chief shepherd. You know, which is, it's good for us, because it's easy for us to think that. To think that as long as the elders are here and as long as the shepherds are here, then we'll be who we need to be. Like, if as individuals we don't take personal responsibility for our relationship with God, then we'll be just like Israel. And so he tells Moses to write this song. And you'll see the song a little bit more in the next lesson. But what was the purpose of this song?
It's going to be a witness.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Because it's a few different times. So he actually says it in verse 30. And he says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you. He says here, this song will be a witness against you. And he says it one more time. And I should have marked it down. But he says one more. Yeah, verse 26. Take the book of the law and place it beside the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, that it may remain there as a witness against you.
It's a constant reminder of God's presence, uh-huh, and God's leadership. And I remember my great aunt. She couldn't read, but she could sing beautiful hymns about God.
Uh-huh.
You know, that she just memorized.
Uh-huh.
She couldn't read the scriptures, but she could sing the songs. I think, you know, these are not educated people.
Yeah.
They don't have the law to read daily, but they have the songs to sing.
Uh-huh. And that's absolutely right. So if you even think about the idea of witnessing against it, because you know what they could have said? We don't know any better. How are we supposed to know? And three different times in these last two chapters, there's been these things that will witness against you if you don't choose to obey God. You have, in chapter 30, this big thing where God says, where Moses says, choose life that you might live. So whenever they're being taken out of the land, whenever they're dying, and they're asking, well, God, why is this happening to us? Well, you had the option. You had the choice. It was put before you. And you chose death. Whenever God, again, is forsaking them because they've forsaken Him. And they're like, well, God, why are you forsaking us? God, why have you forgotten us? The song of Moses will come up. And Moses sang about this. And he talked about this. And then again, later on, you get this chapter with the idea, well, God, because the chapter ends and there's verses 20 and 21, God seems pretty pessimistic about the trajectory of the people. And in verses 27 through 29, it kind of seems like Moses is pretty pessimistic about it too. And even the idea of the Ark of the Covenant being there in verse 26, the Book of the Law being by the Ark of the Covenant. It just makes me think about this. You ever met people who just have Bibles in their homes? And they never crack open the Bible, but it's sitting there? And maybe if they're looking at the Bible, they won't say bad things. Or think bad things, because it's there, you know, and it reminds them and it scares them. And wait, hold on, slow down. Or a more tangible way is you meet people who won't curse in front of Christians, they know that you're a Christian, so they won't say certain things around you because you're a reminder. You witness against them that what they're doing isn't right. And I think that's what these things were supposed to be for the people. The choice that Moses gave them and the song. And then the law being right next to the Ark of the Covenant was supposed to be a reminder, a witness against them, that whenever you decide to disobey God, whenever you decide to forsake Him, that was your decision. And the consequences that you face later on because of it, you can't complain about it. And you can't whine, and you can't say, God, this isn't fair. God, you're not being right or righteous. Because all these things are witnessing against you. And so it goes back, it kind of wants to end with that midsection there. Whenever he's telling them to read the law before the people. So that, like he says in verse 12, assemble the people, the men and the women and the children and the alien who is in your town, so that they may hear and learn. They may hear and learn to do these two things. To fear God and to keep his commandments. Again, that's back to that like little Ecclesiastes theme, how Ecclesiastes ends. Because they're going to get into a land, and for them, they'll be richer than they've ever been. And they'll have, I mean, like, they'll just have more of everything than they've ever had. And the fear was, this is it. This is life. We're satisfied. We're happy now. We have our plenty. And they'll forget to fear God and keep his commandments. Questions or comments there? The bell rungs. So if you say a comment now, you're just holding everybody else. I'm done.
Wait, Moses finishes. Might encourage.
Well, there's this song afterwards, but thank y'all.